Today on Straight Talk Africa, the changing of the guard in Burkina Faso and Zambia. What's next following the death of President Michael Sata and the consequences of people power that triggered political changes in Burkina Faso? That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa. It's Wednesday, November 5th. I am Shaka Sali.
And hello to all our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Mariama Diallo, your social media reporter.
Today, we'll discuss the recent political leadership transitions in Burkina Faso and Zambia and their extreme differences.
Well, Shaka, it's been a busy couple of weeks with so much happening across Africa. We have a lot to talk about coming up later. We'll share your thoughts on the current situations, so hope you'll stay with us.
But first, the governments of Zambia and Burkina Faso are suddenly undergoing transitions of power, but under very different circumstances. My colleague, Paul Ndiho, has more.
The change in Zambia's leadership came suddenly due to the death of President Michael Sata, who passed away on October 28th in London. Mr. Sata had been undergoing treatment in the British capital for undisclosed illness. He was 77 years old. Zambian Vice President Guy Scott has been named the interim leader until an election is held in 3 months. Scott is sub-Saharan Africa's first white leader in 20 years. He outlined the next steps in the nation's political process.
According to the provisions of the Republican Constitution, elections for the office of president will take place within 90 days. In the interim, under the Republic Constitution, I am now acting president of Zambia, mandated to oversee this process.
Just 2 days after Sata's death on October 30th, Burkina Faso was plunged into political chaos when President Blaise Compaoré abruptly resigned following 2 days of massive protests in Ouagadougou over his bid to change the constitution to seek a third presidential term to extend his 27-year reign. Tens of thousands of demonstrators flooded the streets and later stormed the nation's parliament and crushed the state television offices. Emergency services say at least 3 protesters were shot and killed and several others were wounded by security forces. The African Union says that the military leadership should restore constitutional order within 2 weeks or face sanctions, including a travel ban and suspension from the AU. Now, the nation's military is in control and is trying to assure the nation's citizens that there will be a smooth and peaceful political transition to its next president. The army has installed Lieutenant Colonel Yukba Isaac Zida to head the transition. But the move is being criticized by the opposition, politicians, and Western powers who are seeking a quick return to civilian rule. The military says a civilian-led transitional government will be established as soon as possible. Paul Ndiho, VOA News, Washington.
Paul, for that report. For more on the latest developments in the political landscape in Zambia after the death of President Michael Sata, I am joined by Father Frank Bwalya, the president of an opposition party, Alliance for Better Zambia, or ABZ, who joins us via telephone link-up from the Zambian capital, Lusaka. Good evening, Father.
Good evening.
How are you?
I'm okay, except for the funeral that we have, and I wish to take advantage of this opportunity, another opportunity, to pass my condolences to the FACE family, the ruling Patriotic Front, the entire government and all Zambians who are grieving at the loss of our beloved Republican President, Mr. Michael Chilufya Sata, who, as I talk now, lies in state here in Zambia, and we pray that his soul may rest in peace.
Give us a sense as to the mood on the ground, if you can, please.
it's a mood of sorrow, a mood of anxiety, a mood of people gripped with this surprise or shocking death. However, those of us who were there in 2008 when President Mwanawasa died while in office, just like President Sata has died, there seems to be a difference. And it is as if to indicate that Zambians are getting used to the reality that somebody at that level, as a Republican president, sitting president, can actually die in office. So the way the people are touched by his death, I think, is slightly different from the way they were touched when it happened for the first time in our country. A lot of people are going about with their business, but of course, when you go to Mulungush International Conference Center, where the body lies in state, you see a lot of people there who are going to pay their last respect, and actually you then see that the people are really touched by this death.
So are you in fact saying that the people of Zambia have found some kind of unity given the kind of tragedy that you are experiencing?
Zambians always come together when you have an occasion like this to mourn together and to try to do everything possible to maintain peace, to observe law and order and so on. However, this time around, it's a bit different because the threat on peace and stability is not coming from the public. It is coming from inside the ruling party. That's where the threat is coming from. And this is something very different. Zambians have not experienced this. And therefore, this seems to be attracting more the attention of the Zambian people than the funeral itself. Zambians are more thinking about these power squabbles, the struggles within the ruling party, than, in fact, the death that is at stake.
When you talk about perhaps the differences that seem to be apparent within the ruling Patriotic Front Party, is it perhaps because of the kind of constitution that you have? Because we didn't see this sort of thing the last time that you lost President Mwanawasa, which, of course, is about 6 years ago.
It's not a constitutional problem. The crisis that we have at the moment is not caused by the Republican Constitution. The Republican Constitution is very clear insofar as who takes over when a sitting president dies. The cause, I think, is deep-rooted. And what many of us may be talking about are only the symptoms. In my view, the first cause and why there's this difference between what happened when President Mwanawasa died and now President Sata is that President Mwanawasa belonged to a party, the Movement for Multi-Party Democracy, that had become an institution with well-established elaborate structures by the time he died. And therefore, dealing with issues of succession was not handled by an individual. It had to be handled by a group of people following their laid-down democratic structures. And when they finally agreed on who was going to stand, it was smooth in that sense. There could have been quite serious squabbles, but those must have been kept indoor. It was internal. What the public saw was a united political party that was taking advantage of incumbency to make sure that they don't allow power to slip through their fingers, and so they did the right thing. And Zambians recovered very quickly, because once you announce the date of elections, the people get into election fever, and they begin to forget about the grieving and so on, except those people could have been very close to the late president. In the case of PF, this is a party that was formed mainly by an individual, the one who has died, and he controlled the party. The party turned out to have acquired a structure or developed into a structure that was more authoritarian. And other people who were supposed to be part of that collegial responsibility don't seem to have the same influence in the party. Moreover, the democratic structures and processes are not yet developed. So this is not an institution. This is more or less like a personal-to-order political party, and the owner of the party or the most influential person in the party who formed it and controlled it all these years has left, and confusion has set in.
But what about the fact that his deputy, who happens to be the acting president of your country right now, has the reputation for having been, in fact, the chief financier of that particular party, and he also has a constitutional problem in the sense that given that his parents were not born in Zambia, he cannot, in fact, become president beyond 90 days.
I am not too sure who put in more money than the other in helping late President Sata and his PF to get into power. What I do know is that a lot of people put in money, a lot of people contributed to developing the party to make it popular, and in 2011 to manage to form government. The ordinary people, the poor people who came to rallies, who campaigned for him, who went to vote, I think are the ones to whom he owes the success to form government. But of course, Dr. Guy Scott has been with Mr. Sata for many years. And I want to believe that he must have been one of those key persons who helped in terms of raising funds and so on. However, his influence within the party has now been shown to be almost nothing. And since this is a struggle for who takes over control of this party, who takes over, as candidate under the ruling party ticket, and in many cases in Africa, it's difficult to unseat, a government in this manner. There is this belief that once I'm nominated as presidential candidate, it's a given. Then I'm eventually going to become Republican president. So you can see that it has now been exposed that his influence is not as much as some of us may have previously thought. And it complicates matters on his part because he cannot stand. He is on record himself having said that himself and the firstborn of the late president were disqualified by a provision in the Constitution that was tailored specifically to prevent, to block a former president, Kenneth Kaunda, from contesting the elections after he was defeated in 1991 and multipartism introduced in Zambia.
Well, thank you so much, Father Frank Bwadia, for that update from Zambia. He joined us via telephone link from Lusaka. Now joining us here in our Washington studios are two distinguished guests, Professor Kenneth Mwenda, adjunct professor of law at American University's Washington College of Law, based here in the nation's capital, and Paul Sankara, brother of the assassinated Burkina Faso president, Captain Thomas Sankara, who also serves as a member of the Committee Against Impunity in Burkina Faso, a group based in the United States. Well, I have to say, gentlemen, that it is a pleasure, and I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the two of you on Straight Talk Africa.
You're most welcome, Shaka.
Thank you.
Well, it's a pleasure. Later in the program, we'll give you, the audience, a chance to call and talk with our guests. The number to call is 202-619-3111. U.S. country code is 1. Let me come to you immediately, Kenneth. You obviously must be monitoring what is happening in your homeland. Any particular reason why we seem to really be experiencing some sort of power struggle right now? Because your country has always managed the transitions with dignity and admiration. In fact, since 1991, when Kenneth David Kaunda, having been at the political helm of your country for 27 years, was shocked by being defeated by Frederick Chiluba, and he handed over so smoothly.
Thanks, Shaka. I think it's a storm in the teacup. It's going to pass. It's part of, I consider it as part of the development of the ruling party, Patriotic Front. Mm-hmm. They've only been in power for 3 years. So if you really look at team formation, they're still in that stage of storming, they really need to identify the values which bring them collectively together in the norming phase before you can actually see full performance. Mm-hmm. So I think this is just a phase. It's a storm in a teacup, and I do not foresee major obstacles going forward when, you know, we go past the elections. I think Father Bwalya highlighted a few critical issues, especially that he's on the ground, in terms of, you know, personality cult when you come to leadership. And the person who actually embodies the image of a political party when he's gone, there's somewhat a loss of identity, people trying to find their feet around the place. So I think it's a storm in the teacup. I do not foresee the culture, the political culture of Zambia, looking back. We've never had major political upheavals which could destabilize the country. Very unlikely, very unlikely.
Now, Eddie Glunga, the Secretary General of the party and arguably the second perhaps most important person right now, he says that his dismissal, in his words, was illegal and provocative.
There were two things there. First of all, there is the Republican constitution on the one hand. Then there's a party constitution, the PF constitution. In the PF constitution, the contentious provisions are Article 53, I think, and Article 54. Mm-hmm. And I think Mr. Lungu was pointing to Article 54, that, you know, under the party constitution. Under the Republican constitution, Article 38 and 39. 38 talks about who takes over power when a sitting president dies. And it's very clear that it's the vice president who will take over. There's no dispute about that. Mm-hmm. Now, we have to understand that a party constitution cannot override a Republican constitution.
Correct.
That's just a contract which brings party members together. The Republican constitution is the ground norm of the country. So whatever is in the party constitution should be subservient or should be secondary to what's in the Republican constitution.
I see.
Now, when you look at Article 53 and Article 54, with all due respect to various legal opinions that have come through, including the Central Committee, my humble observation is that the decision that was taken by the acting president was within his powers. If you look at Article 54.
I see. Well, before we pause for a short break, would like to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is on the social networking website Facebook. Just enter the keyword Straight Talk Africa, become a fan, and connect with other friends of the Voice of America. We'll be right back with you, so please don't go away.
Zambia's Guy Scott will act as president of Zambia until presidential elections are held in 90 days. Guy Scott is the first white African leader since South Africa's Frederick de Klerk, often disparagingly referred to as a ceremonial vice president. He was born in 1944 in what was then Northern Rhodesia. His father emigrated from Glasgow to work as a doctor on the railways. A Cambridge-trained economist, he entered politics in 1990, joining the MMD, the Movement for Multi-Party Democracy, which won the first multi-party elections the next year. As agricultural minister, he oversaw the recovery from a devastating drought in 1992 and 1993. He joined Michael Sata's Patriotic Front, or PF, in 2001. He was appointed as vice president in September 2011 after the PF's elections victory. As his parents were not born in Zambia, he is not eligible to run for president.
Sia Nyama Karoma, the First Lady of Sierra Leone, speaks to VOA on the Ebola crisis.
I would want the people in West Africa to know that Ebola is real. Ebola kills. Early detection and prompt treatment can save lives. And I'm asking our people not to victimize or stigmatize survivors. Ebola is a challenge, but together we'll all be able to overcome it.
That was Sia Nyama Karoma, the First Lady of Sierra Leone, speaking to VOA Africa on the Ebola crisis.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. What is your opinion about today's topic? Call us at 202 619-3111. U.S. country code 1. When you call, remember the following. Ask only one question. Keep your comment brief and turn down the volume on your radio or television. Now let's return to Straight Talk Africa.
President Mike Osata was a visionary leader. In the last 3 years, Zambia has seen unprecedented development. And what is interesting is that President Sata was a leader who associated himself with the underprivileged. Several parts of the country have been opened that were not accessible before he took over office. These have been opened up under a program that he launched called Link 8000 to basically upgrade and of course bring on stream new roads of bituminous standard. Not only that, he has left 650 clinics under construction, or in a bid to make health accessible to rural Zambia.
Well, before I actually continue, I just want to touch on his nickname, that he was known as King Cobra, just to explain why was he known as King Cobra?
One would say any politician has their style. And I guess that was his style, really. That was his way of branding himself at one particular point in time. But his real name when it came to delivering for the people was man of action. He walked the talk.
Welcome back. That was Zambian ambassador to the United States, Palan Mulonda, speaking with our Mariama Jaro last week on the political legacy of the Zambian President Michael Sata. Well, I have to add that I once had the opportunity to interview Mr. Sata. That is, before he became president. And you remember that he used to be vehemently against Beijing, against China. He was, in fact, being supported by Taiwan.
That's correct.
And he ended up characterizing me as a black Chinese, a black African Chinese.
Oh, that's correct.
Because I dared question his opposition towards Beijing. Very interesting. He was a man of his words.
Yeah. Oh, it's interesting, Shaka, that you've raised that issue. Quite rightly, the Patriotic Front, when they were campaigning to get into power, Mr. Sata campaigned on the premise that, you know, they'll bring in the Taiwanese people as opposed to Chinese investment. But when they came into power, there was a change of foreign policy, mm-hmm. embracing the Chinese. And I think that's an issue that in the recent past we've tried not to dwell on it, given the circumstances that we are faced with. But from a sort of intellectual viewpoint, from an honest viewpoint, there was, of course, change of ideology shift from Taiwan to China.
That is correct. That's correct. Now, Paul Sankala, I have to say that it is a pleasure to meet you, at least for the first time. You happen to be a younger brother of a man that was very, very much revered across the continent for the short time in which he was the president of Burkina Faso. How did you react to the changes that just occurred in your country?
Thank you for having me today.
You're most welcome, Chaka.
First and foremost, I want to take advantage of this show and pay my tribute to freedom fighters mm-hmm. in Burkina Faso. These young guys that have decided to end up the 27 years of dictatorship of Compaoré's regime. My reaction would be double. First, as a younger brother, as you pointed out, but beside this biological relationship with Thomas Sankara, as a young militant of the revolution at that time, mm-hmm. it's the revenge of the history. So, young Burkinabe, young Africans lost hope with Thurma's assassination in 1987. Mm-hmm. 27 years, in the same month, October, 2 weeks later on, history gave us the truth. Mm-hmm. So roughly, as an introduction, that's what I have to say about what's happened in Burkina Faso in the past few weeks.
Now, your sister-in-law, the widow of the late Captain Thomas Sankara, is on record saying that the recent uprising has, in her words, quote, rehabilitated, unquote, her husband's memory. Do you agree with that?
What's happened? There was a case in Burkina introduced in the court, Burkina Faso court, in 1997, in order to avoid what they call it in French system, the decennal prescription. 10 years after, if you haven't done anything, you couldn't claim for justice and truth. Since 1997, nothing happened in Burkina Faso, because that's the same regime was still in power. So justice was just on the paper, not you know, in a practical way. Mm-hmm. So we went to a United Nations Human Rights Commission, and they said the family was right on all the points. It's really important to recall a couple of things. First, nobody in the family didn't see Thomas' body. Second, we have been given a piece of paper, so-called death certificate. Died for natural causes.
Natural causes?
Course, correct.
But Blaise Compaoré is on record saying that his killing was an accident.
All right, okay. Whatever happened, that's why it's very important to go through a scientific process, justice process. What does that mean? Let's make a DNA and make sure that the grave in Ouagadougou, Thomas is indeed there. Nobody can claim 100% that is there.
They never handed the body to you, to the family?
No, of course not. That's why the International Commission for Campaign for Justice for Thomas Sankara asked Blaise Compaoré, former regime, to open the case, allow a forensic test, DNA, and make sure that Thomas is there.
But what about the fact that there are reports, and of course you are in a position to verify this, that Thomas Sankara and Blaise Compaoré were just like this? They were the best of friends.
Sort of, yes.
Any evidence?
Somehow, yes. I personally saw Blaise Compaoré many times coming in a parent's house in Burkina Faso during the revolution. And the last time we saw him, it was a couple of weeks before Thomas' assassination in October 15th, 1987. So the friendship, yes.
Did he extend condolences to the family when his friend died?
No, he didn't have anything done in this way.
So you agree with the saying that with friends like that, you may not need enemies, really. If you have a friend like that, perhaps you don't need an enemy after all.
Yeah, but there is an African quote saying that within friends, if there is any enemy within friends, of course, the enemy is outside. It would be easy for them to come on you.
I see.
So Blaise Compaoré has been used by different circles.
You keep
around Burkina Faso,
yes,
outside of the continent, to stop what has started in Burkina Faso from 1983 to 1987.
I see. Well, you are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of a discussion in a moment, but first here is Mariama Jaro. Take it away, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaka. It's been a very busy week and a half with just so much happening on the continent. Still to come, we'll share some of the outstanding feedback we've received from our audience through social media. But now, here is our letter of the week.
Princess William from Dar es Salaam in Tanzania writes, "To have a smooth transfer of power in African countries, it's most essential to observe the following. Leaders in question should observe the law and not seek to alter it for their own benefits. Also, the citizens should only elect the leaders whose policies are in their country's interest. That would keep them from protesting soon after a leader has stepped into power. Political tolerance must be observed, and the falling parties should accept defeat."
Like Voice of America on Facebook. Follow VOA on Twitter. Join VOA on our YouTube channel. Like, follow, join VOA.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. Call us now with your questions and comments. The number 202-619-3111. And the U.S. country code is 1. Call direct and we'll call you right back. Remember to keep your questions brief. Now back to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui, and welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. Once again, it's time to bring in my colleague and social media reporter, Mariama. Take it away again, Mariama.
Well, Shaka, Zambia and Burkina Faso are undergoing political transitions under very, very different circumstances. Zambia's president, Michael Sata, died on October 28, leaving former Vice President Guy Scott to assume leadership of the country until elections are held in 90 days, as stipulated in the Constitution. Meanwhile, Burkina Faso tumbled into political chaos late last week after President Blaise Compaoré resigned following 2 days of massive protests over his bid to change the constitution to seek a third presidential term. He's ruled for a generation, and people who were born 30 years ago have only known him as a president. Well, this leads us to our question of the week, which asks, what specific steps do you think should be taken so that African countries can experience predictable and peaceful transfer of power? Well, thanks everyone for using all our social media platforms to communicate to us. Let's begin with a comment from Muhammad Bashir in Abuja, Nigeria, who writes, "We need to empower our strategic institutions to position them in a way that can prevent subversion by our leaders. The electoral commissions must be truly independent, and we must be ready to stand by our rights." Well, another comment comes from Firi Naftali from Lusaka in Zambia, who says, "Africa is so used to chiefdom leadership. A lot of sensitization on democratic values is needed." Well, I'm just wondering how much more sensitization is really needed. I mean, the need for democratic values has been talked about for generations. Without it, can a nation ever expect to prosper? I'll leave it to you, Shaka, and your guests to answer those two.
Thank you, thank you. Let me come to you again, Paul, if you don't mind, really. Are you surprised by the manner in which events in your country have turned out, as opposed to the manner in which, for example, you have this sort of orderly transitional process in Southern Africa, in Zambia? You have a constitution. Both countries claim to have constitutions, but surely there seems to be an apparent constitutional arrangement in Lusaka. In your particular case, I am tempted to say one would probably say there is, in fact, what someone would call a personal manifesto as opposed to a constitution. How do you react to that?
Okay, first, I want to correct something. It was not a chaos after Blaise Compaoré.
But 27
years of Blaise Compaoré, he is a chaos. You have a million people on the street without weapons, just their convictions, saying, okay, basta, as we said in Spanish. Mm-hmm. You can be candidate for next year once again. No. So the link with the Zambia cases, it's different, as you pointed out. You have one side, a 27 years regime, who wants to revise, to change the constitution with a different kind of maneuvering approach. And the other side, you have a president naturally died. And then they have discussion internal political party of the the president.
Right.
So it's. But getting back to the main question, it's. I totally agree with the brother from Abuja. We need strong institutions.
Correct.
Just to recall
not strong men.
Obama, not strong men.
Because after all, at the end of the day, there is no such a thing as a strong man, really.
Of course, it's. Why do we have different examples in Africa that are successful? Yes. Right?
Yeah.
We can name a few of them. Senegal, Ghana, Botswana.
Look at Ufe Boigny, Ivory Coast, when he died, what happened to Ivory Coast? Look at Siad Barre in Somalia, what happened to Somalia when he was overthrown? Look at Mobutu Sese Seko Wazabanga of the then Zaire, now DRC, what happened to that country?
Absolutely, and the worst...
Look at Egypt.
Blaise Compaoré case is worse because it's now, it's not 30 years before. You name three different former presidents. That's in the 70s.
Worker.
But Blaise Compaoré has been
showed, years.
Presented like a new young leader, African leader, that is an example.
In fact, he was referred to by his admirers as a beautiful blaze.
Correct, but...
We'll come back to that. Mariama, what is our audience talking about?
Well, Africa definitely needing better institutions, strong institutions, but not strong leaders. I think that's a quote that came from one of those speeches, the famous Obama speeches that is going to stay in a lot of people's mind for a long time. Let's move on to another posting from Mahoro Peace in Kigali, Rwanda, who writes, Africa needs strong institutions, not strong rulers, and education. Of course, that's what I just said. That's what Mr. Obama talked about in general back in the days when he went and had this huge speech that people listened to and are still referring to today. And finally, let's look at another one with Roger Original from Kampala in Uganda, who says, we need strict legislation on terms limit and slash down on president's powers to reduce their influence on unnecessary constitutional amendments for their selfish interests. That's a good point, Roger. Too many unnecessary constitutional amendments that may not be benefiting the majority of the citizens. Shaka and guests.
Kenneth, how do you go about it? Everybody talks about you need strong institutions, not strong men. And of course, as Mariama says, President Obama addressed that issue in 2009 in Accra, the Ghanaian capital.
Right.
But there are people who say he simply talked the talk. He has not been able to walk that talk so that people can walk the walk.
I think that approach takes a lot from institutional economics. When you're building reforms for governance, some of the things that you focus on is to build strong institutions for effective checks and balances. But closely tied to that, I think one issue that we seem to overlook or underestimate is the need to tie political dispensation to economic reality. Poverty has an impact on the way people behave. We spoke about Compaoré having come to power 27 years ago. We had President Kaunda, who was in power about the same time, but the Zambian people reacted differently. Both as situations of about 27 years.
Mm.
What we are seeing in most parts of the Francophone world, Sierra Leone is Anglophone, Liberia Anglophone, but they sit in the midst of this Francophone belt. Like Ghana, Nigeria, there's a lot of influence of the military coming to power. For example, what happened in in Burkina Faso, one would have imagined that the best scenario in a democratic environment would have been the Chief Justice or the Speaker of the National Assembly or Parliament to have taken over power temporarily before the elections, not the military. But the military are too eager in the Francophone countries to come to the front. Mm. You don't see that behavior in Southern Anglophone belt. That is a sort of critical distinction. The other thing...
And Mwenda, when we actually talk about the country descending into chaos, that's what we're meaning. It's like when the people have the revolution, you had about 1 million people descending on the street, making their voices heard. It's hard to believe that those people worked so hard to get there, and yet the military comes and takes over and is basically almost taking all the credit. And that's what we mean. I'll let you continue, Mwenda. Yes.
Then the other thing that we have to sort of look at is the way Kampaore came to power. Kampaore did not come to power in a democratic environment. I remember I was at university when he came to power. He flew to Lusaka to meet President Kaunda, who was chairman, I think, for Non-Aligned States, and Kaunda refused to meet him. It was, and I hope that the international community will try Kampaore for what he did.
Mm.
You know, even if there is, my brother cited what in law we call time period where you have to bring an action before you lose the right to sue. But that's for civil procedure. I don't know for the civil systems. For criminal law, you can bring an action at any time. Mm-hmm. So if it cannot be triggered under municipal law within Burkina Faso, we can trigger international law and get this guy to be accountable for what he did.
You know,
that will send a strong message to all these rulers that you don't come to power through the barrel.
You know, we keep talking about how Kampaore comes to power in 87. In fact, he came to power in 83 with your brother, with that first coup that brought your brother in power. It was, in fact, masterminded by Kampaore.
The first, I think, point that's for the... It's a process about what happened today. No one can claim that he did an analysis in details about what would happen in Burkina. But at least we knew that since Thomas Sankara has been assassinated, it takes time. And then the journalist case, Norbert Zongo, 1998,
right.
The whole, pretty much the same number of crowd of people, the whole society said
things,
no.
A lot of things have happened.
And then...
But you are talking to a person that was a favorite of the West, for example, of France and Washington.
That's my main point here, is thank you for them. United Nations, the US, Europe Union, including African Union, to make a pressure on the military in Burkina to leave in 2 weeks the power to the civilian. Thank
okay.
you. But they should do it long time before, using the equipment and all the power that they have to avoid what happened a few days ago.
We'll come to that again later. Thanks, Mariama, for bringing us this week's audience reaction.
Well, power to the people, and hopefully that is being echoed all over Burkina Faso, West Africa, and the entire African continent. Well, that does it for today's social media segment. Thanks to our guests for responding to our audience. Just a reminder that we appreciate all the feedback, whether it's in social media form or using other means to communicate to us. Please, please keep them coming. And if you are a new fan, just drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is africatv@voanews.com. Or post your comment on our Facebook page. Just enter the keywords Straight Talk Africa. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com, or you can join our YouTube channel. Simply subscribe to VOA TV to Africa. Now, let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program.
Next week on Straight Talk Africa, remembering Dr. Ali Mazrui, one of Africa's greatest thinkers who died on October 12th. The Kenyan intellectual spoke for the continent and generations past, present, and future. That's next week, right here on Straight Talk Africa. Let's look at a timeline of the military army takeover in Burkina Faso. On October 15, 1987, Kampaore seized power in a coup in which his former friend and one of Africa's most loved leaders, Thomas Sankara, is ousted and assassinated. On June 2, 1991, a new constitution establishes a multi-party system and brings an end to 8 years of military rule. On December 1st of 1991, Compaoré is elected president, but the vote is marked by an opposition boycott. On November 15, 1998, Compaoré is re-elected at a vote marked by another opposition boycott. On April 11, 2000, deputies modified the constitution to give the president a 5-year mandate, renewable once. In 1997, deputies had approved an unlimited number of 7-year terms. On November 21, 2010, Compaoré wins the presidential elections at the first round. Opposition candidates reject the outcome and denounce serious irregularities. On December 12, 2013, Compaoré mentions plans for a referendum on changes to Article 37 of the Constitution, which limits presidential mandates to 2. Opposition figures accuse him of preparing a constitutional coup. On October 21st of this year, the government announces a referendum on the constitutional change, which would allow Compaoré to stand in the November 2015 presidential election. On October 28th, about 1 million people, according to the opposition, take to the streets to denounce the plans. On October 30th, Burkina's army seizes power, with the head of the armed forces announcing the dissolution of government and parliament and the creation of a transitional body to run the country amid violent protests against Compaoré's 27-year rule. At the moment, Compaoré's whereabouts are unknown.
We are able to touch on things that are important to people on an everyday basis. We hope that our viewers are getting inspired when they watch our show. They're getting a view of the world from a different perspective, things that perhaps are not in their immediate vicinity. Today, I could put in on the show something that is a little different, a little unique, and this gives me that inspiration to come to work.
If you like today's show, please write and tell us what you think or give us some suggestions. Be sure to tell us what station you're tuned into. Our address, Straight Talk Africa, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue Southwest, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. Or send us an email at africatv@voanews.com. Log on to our website at voaafrica.com. Or post your comments on Facebook, keywords Straight Talk Africa.
Dr. Guy Scott was one of the founders of the Patriotic Front, together with the late president. So they shared a lot in common. Vice President Scott shared in the vision that President Sata laid before all of us. Dr. Guy Scott is not new to Zambian politics. He's been in politics before, before assuming vice presidents and before assuming power. He served in other governments. He has a track record, an impressive track record. Dr. Scott is not new to Zambians. He knows Zambia. Zambians know him. And I am confident that he will hold the fort until the people decide who leads them going forward.
Welcome back. That was Zambian ambassador to the United States, Pelan Mulonda, who sat down with Mariama on the interim president of Zambia, Dr. Guy Scott. Today we are discussing the recent political leadership transitions in Burkina Faso and Zambia and the extreme differences. Our distinguished guests are Professor Kenneth Mwenda, Adjunct Professor of Law at American University's Washington College of Law, based here in the nation's capital, and Paul Sankara, brother of the assassinated Burkina Faso President Captain Thomas Sankara, who also serves as a member of the Committee Against Impunity in Burkina Faso, a group based in the United States. Well, gentlemen, again, I have to say that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the two of you on Straight Talk Africa.
was talking
to you. You're most welcome. Let's go to the lifeline of the show, which are the telephone callers. Good evening, Mark Place from Zambia.
Yeah, from Zambia, Ndola.
How are you?
I'm okay, and how are you?
Terrific. What is your question, please?
For me, it's not a question, it's a comment about Guy Scott.
You have a minute.
Pardon?
You have 1 minute, please.
Okay. Guy Scott is a very, very good person and a very patriotic Zambian. So was Dr. David Kaunda. These attributes are not applicable to themselves only, but also to their wives. Dr. Kaunda never betrayed Zambia. Neither do we expect that Guy Scott can betray our country. However, there is a parentage clause which says if you're not an indigenous Zambian, you cannot be president. And I would like to support that parentage clause. Not that, you know, these people are bad. All I'm saying is that we need indigenous people to fill the position of president so that we can safeguard our security, national security. If you can recall, Shaka, in 1966, we had Kenneth Kaunda, and 50 years later, we have Guy Scott. And Zambia has been very stable with these two people. But we shall not always be so lucky.
Thank you.
That's my opinion.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Let's stay in Southern Africa and go to Botswana. Good evening, Calvin. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Good evening, Chaka.
Usually terrific. How are you today?
Very fine.
So what is your question, observation, Calvin?
Just a contribution, Chaka.
You have a minute, go for it.
Yeah, please. You know what we are trying to say? Please, we ate Zambians, all of them, please, to keep to the peace they have enjoyed for the past. And we are celebrating the Jubilee. We avoid any confrontation whoever wants to bring confusion in our country. Let our peace continue prevailing, please.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Let's go to Nana in Ghana. Good evening, Nana. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Yeah, good evening, Shaka.
I am hugely terrific. How are you today?
I'm doing great. My question goes to the Zambian ambassador to the U.S.
Well, unfortunately, we have no Zambian ambassador to the U.S. right here.
The diplomat, the Zambian representative in the studio.
He is not a representative of the government of Zambia, unfortunately. He's a professor of law at American University and does a lot of other things.
Okay. My question goes to him. I am having a problem with the Zambian constitutional instrument. You know, we are in Africa, and literally all countries in Africa are burdened with a lot of socio-economic challenges. You know, we have issues of health to address, issues of education, infrastructure, even distribution of basic potable water across various countries. And so to me, what is the wisdom in, after the death of a president, holding another elections within 90 days?
Thank you. Thank you very much. What about that? And in fact, even further, why do you retain such a constitution, frankly, that was not, in fact, a constitution, was a personal manifesto of Frederick Chiluba, targeting founding president Kenneth Kaunda? Even though Chiluba himself was later discovered, he also came from somewhere else.
Good question there from Ghana. First of all, I think one issue that has come out clear is the need to have, you know, constitutions which can stand the test of time. We are grappling with that in Africa. Right now, Zambia is in the process of preparing a new constitution. But the question that has come from Ghana is a very valid one. In fact, we can go beyond that. It's not just 90 days. Mm-hmm. If the elections are held within 90 days, there'll be elections again within 12 to 15 months.
Yes.
So that's a very costly exercise.
Where do you get the money from?
Exactly. But these are issues I think we learn from experience, and we do hope that we will address them. Some of the issues that have come up, definitely like the caller from Botswana mentioned, Zambia has been a very peaceful country, and we do hope that things will continue the way they've been. Mm. Like I said, I think this is a storm in the teacup. It's now a question for the ruling party and the opposition as well to really understand that not every Dick, Tom and Harry on the streets can be a president. There's need for quality leadership in Africa. What we are seeing now is a lot of opportunists who think they can run the country.
Right.
People without a track record, no major accomplishments of life, you just come on the stage and you want to run a country. I think those type of people, they need to be sieved by the electorate. The electorate need to be aware to some awake to some of these issues.
Some of these people, in fact, have gone on record saying that they are the only people with the vision thing. They are the only individuals in their countries who can think.
Well, Shaka, when there's a situation like this, you've lost a president. Same thing with Burkina Faso. The president has left. Opportunists come on the stage. Okay, there will be all sorts of characters masquerading as heroes, as visionaries.
Mm, mm.
But I think it's up to the electorate to try and sieve some of these people. In fact, this is an age of enlightenment. We don't need, you know, people with backward type of thinking to come on the stage.
Now, Paul,
yes.
You said that the African Union is doing a good thing. Obviously, it is doing a good thing to give 2 weeks or ultimatum to the soldiers in Ouagadougou to hand over power to civilian authorities, in fact, to restore constitutional order. What about the fact that, yes, they have done well, for example, in making sure that they do not accept military coups to succeed, except, of course, in Egypt? What about also making sure that no individual president is allowed to change a constitution that is going to benefit that particular individual? And also, not allowing an election to be rigged, not having these periodic elections, which are basically sham elections.
That's what I was, before the short break, I was saying that, thanking the United Nations, the United States of America, European Union, including African Union, for what they have said, and they're still putting pressure on the military authority in Burkina Faso in order to leave the power and to in the hands of the civilian authority. But at the same time, I said it, they should do it before, in order to avoid the situation that we're living today in Burkina Faso. Don't trust any of my following words.
Uh-huh.
Go to the United Nations website, you will see 1999, 2000, Blaise Compaoré involved in Diamond in Angola with Jonas Savimbi. Sierra Leone, Liberia, Ivory Coast, the rebels. It's something that it doesn't come from an opponent organization or civil society in Burkina. It's there. It's a public information, well known.
He needs to be brought to account.
All this.
But unfortunately, he has been helping some of his friends to fight against terrorism.
So
let's wait and see. Unfortunately, Paul, time happens not to be our best ally. On that note, thanks to our distinguished guests, Professor Kenneth Mwenda, adjunct professor of law at American University's Washington College of Law, based here in the nation's capital. Paul Sankara, brother of the assassinated Burkina Faso president, Captain Thomas Sankara, of the Committee Against Impunity in Burkina Faso. And last but not least, Father Frank Bwalya, the president for Alliance for Better Zambia, ABZ, opposition party, who joined us earlier via telephone link up from the capital, Lusaka. Thanks to our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners, we thank you for tuning in. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning's Daybreak Africa with James Bate. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning in to Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, and please remember to keep the African hopes alive. Thank you.